Part of being happy and healthy and successful is the practice of putting our attention on those things that make us happy, healthy, and successful. The other day in a conversation with my wife, we were driving out to dinner, and the topic became the top three things that make us happy. And so I thought that was an interesting thing, because it's not all the time that we take this inventory that we're even aware of these top three things in our lives. So do we put our attention on the top three things that make us happy? Or do we let our attention slip and slide and let it be grabbed by outside influences, you know, things in the environment? Do we let go of responsibility for controlling and focusing our attention? So let's look at the top three things that make you happy. What are those top three things for you? For my wife, Mary Ann, two of the top three things that make her happy are watching sunsets and going out on the water on a rented pontoon boat. So every time she does those two things, either together or separately, she is happy. That's an environment that really contributes a lot of good feelings to her. One of the top three things for me that makes me happy is learning new processes or software or trying to understand ideas. Now, I use computers and other electronic devices like iPhones and iPads and other things, and I find that very interesting. It causes me to use my imagination, and it causes me to use my mind, trying to see things from different points of view so I can understand things that are unknown to me and see if I can make them known to me. That makes me happy. As I was thinking about that a little while ago, I realized that as a small child, I did something similar to this in order to make myself happy. I come from a large family, and while the rest of the family was inside in the living room watching television when I was a child, what I would do is I would go into the kitchen, close the kitchen door, turn on the radio and listen to radio shows like Boston Blackie and things of that sort, The Lone Ranger, and other entertainments. But at the same time, what I would be doing, either in the silence or with the radio going, is I would play with Lincoln Logs. Now, I wouldn't use Lincoln Logs to build a house, per se. I would use the Lincoln Logs, and in my imagination, I would convert them into beings, human beings. And so they frequently got converted into two groups of people. And I have no idea where this information or knowledge of these two groups of people came from. But I would take these Lincoln Logs and convert them into two groups. One group was the Athenians, and the other group was the Spartans. And these two groups, just like in reality, historically, they were in conflict. And so now they were battling on the kitchen floor and up the kitchen table leg to see who could wrest control and gain supremacy of the top of the kitchen table. And I would do this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth in my own imagination. And it's playing with those things, playing with those ideas, playing with the imagination is one of the things that makes me happy, even today. And frankly, it's one of the reasons I do these Sunday talks. I like playing with my imagination, ideas, and talking about them. What are those top three things for you that contribute to your happiness? You probably already recognize, as you put your attention on the top three things that contribute to your happiness or your health or your success, that you are already using the law of attraction in a way of optimum value to you. You are putting yourself at a great advantage by putting your attention on those things that make you happy is the way to attract more things that make you happy. Now, it's very possible that some of you are saying that there are things that you don't want that you're currently experiencing, they're in your situation, your life condition, that are so powerful that they are commanding your attention. And it is difficult to shift your focus from those things that are demanding of your attention to the things that make you happy. I think this predicament is normal. When the house is on fire, it's very difficult to put your attention on what makes you happy. You need to deal with that particular urgent situation. So we could change the questions to, what are the top three things that concern you? Or, what are the top three things that are disturbing of your peace? This is part of the inventory taking process. As we bring this information that is unknown or vague or ambiguous or kind of in the dark, and we bring it into the light, we have much more influence over it. We can process it much more effectively. We don't have to fight that information that comes into our awareness when we say, in answer to the question, this is one of the top three things that concern me, or this is one of the top three things that disturbs my peace. We don't have to fight them. We don't have to run away from them. And in fact, if we can adopt a third point of view where we observe them, just observing them, just putting our attention and noticing what we notice, see what we see, hear what we hear, feel what we feel about them, they will change. They will change. They were not created in present time. None of these things that we're concerned about or fear are originating from 2010. They come from way back when. Now, the conditions that we're experiencing, the house being on fire, is occurring, perhaps, in 2010, but the root of it didn't start in 2010. How long should we observe? Not fight or flight, not fight or flee, not run away, not distract ourselves, not get frustrated or impatient. How long should we observe those things that concern us and disturb us when they command our attention? Why don't we take a page from God's playbook? By that I mean, if you look at Genesis and use that format, God created things and then looked upon them. And we know from Genesis that he looked upon them and saw them as good. Now, God saw a need, created them, looked upon what he created, and saw them as good. Now, in Genesis, it doesn't say that how long it took God to go from looking at them to recognizing, observing, and concluding that they were good. So, for the rest of us, it takes as long as it takes. So, if we can look at whatever that situation is we're facing and observe it until we recognize it is good, it doesn't make the house not be on fire. That situation is outside of us. It doesn't mean that the house all of a sudden goes out. But if we can observe something completely and deeply until we arrived at a place where we were no longer concerned, we would have released our fears, we would have released our resistance, and we'll have a change of viewpoint. We would have determined in a new viewpoint what specific response to that situation is available to us. And we're going to be in a position to be able to act upon it. Prior to that, I'm in fear, I'm in fear, I'm in fear. That really is the end of the story. There's no productive place to go with that energy. And as soon as we shift out of that, then a specific response, the opposite of stress being a non-specific response to a demand placed upon the body. Instead of it being non-specific, we would have become specific and then take productive action in that direction. So, what are the top three things of most concern or most disturbing of your peace? Most of us already recognize we can't outrun them. And I don't recommend fighting them because I believe this to be the problem with that. We feed what we fight. And you can look at the history of wars against you name it to recognize that not only does what we fight persist, it actually grows and becomes more of a problem. We feed what we fight. When we encounter something that concerns us or disturbs our peace, a first reaction can be to change that something. That something is the enemy. We need to change that something. Well, that's maybe a natural reaction for a caveman or a cavewoman, but it doesn't necessarily serve us today. When we do that and we think that that thing over there, be it a person, a thing, or a condition, is what controls our happiness, it's as if we take our happiness and deliver it to that thing. We hand it over. We hand over the power or control of our happiness to those outside circumstances or symptoms. If we think they're the reason we're unhappy, we just gave our power away. Last night, Marianne and I had tickets for a musical retrospective of Simon and Garfunkel's music from the 60s. Some professional musicians had created a show, and now we're playing around the country. And here in Naples, they were going to play at the Naples Philharmonic, which is a beautiful venue, high class, used for everything from opera to all kinds of musical situations and even professional speaking tours. So these professional musicians were playing the songs of Simon and Garfunkel at the same time as showing slides that accompanied our history when these songs were popularized. So this is essentially the 60s, so you'd see slides of whatever was going on, newspaper slides or pieces of information, visual information from television. So there were slides of everything from race riots to Woodstock and the assassination of President John F. Kennedy to all kinds of things going on in our country at that time. Just before we left the house on our way to dinner before the concert at the Phil. The Phil is what it's called locally. Let's go to the Phil. That's the Philharmonic in Naples. So I said to Marianne, I intend to enjoy this concert. I repeated that intention several times to her and to myself. I intend to enjoy this concert. We had a great dinner, arrived at the Phil with plenty of time, had great seats, and just before the concert began, a man and woman sat in the two empty seats right in front of us. Now, they didn't obscure our view. However, the man was either totally drunk, totally under the influence of drugs, or both. Both Marianne and I voted for both. This was an interesting dilemma. I judged the man's behavior as inappropriate from the viewpoint of the Philharmonic. I saw his behavior as being alcohol or drug or both induced. I was convinced that this person would not have behaved himself if he wasn't under the influence of whatever substances he had ingested. His behavior and physical state seemed to me to be totally inappropriate for a place like the Philharmonic. But, on the other hand, his behavior and his physical state may have been totally appropriate if he were at an outdoor rock concert. If this had been taking place outdoors, maybe he would have been totally in his element. So here was a drunken man having a hell of a good time in the middle of old conservative Philharmonic attendees. with vastly different views of what is and what is not appropriate behavior. After the first 2 or 3 minutes, I realized the conflict I was experiencing was between rules of behavior that I have and his rules of behavior, which may have been modified because of his substances. I knew that I wanted to impose my rules of behavior on him, even though he wasn't trying to impose his rules of behavior on me. He was just behaving according to however he was feeling at that moment. I assumed that his attention was to enjoy the concert. That's why he was there. He came ready to enjoy the concert. He just was doing it differently than the way I thought it should have been done. I would say he succeeded at enjoying the concert. In my mind, though, during this whole process of minutes, I went through various scenarios of possibilities and probabilities. To tell you that these things ranged from the simple tap on the shoulder, asking him to calm down, quiet down, or whatever, to punching him in the head in response to his reaction to my request for him to quiet down, to us fighting in the aisles, to bringing through our disruption and fighting, to bringing the entire concert to a screeching halt, being escorted out by the ushers, being dragged out, and then having to explain to the police what exactly what happened. So I thought, if all of this is my imagination, right? And I thought, this is my side of the story. I didn't approve, and I didn't appreciate how this man was enjoying himself. You go, wow. Let me think. Is that real justification for getting in an argument and fighting in the middle of a contest or a concert and battling and... Wow. A little while later during the concert, I realized that my enjoyment of the concert depended on me, solely on me, and not on other people's behaviors or, quotes, misbehaviors, end quotes. I went back to deciding to enjoy the concert and to accept that this man was enjoying the concert in his own way. His way was different than my way. Perhaps it was different from the way of other people in the audience, but it was his way. He paid the same amount for his tickets as I did for mine. He had the right to enjoy the concert the way he was enjoying the concert. In my experiences, I've seen brain-injured people. I've seen retarded people. I've seen drunken people before. And I recognized that in those experiences, I could, if I chose, I could get into a place of greater acceptance, that I could control my thinking, I could control my feelings and my behaviors, and not others. I could look at them from compassion or amusement or acceptance or whatever, recognizing it wasn't up to me to control them. So when I did that, I took back my power to enjoy the concert, and I did. There is no effective control other than effective self-control. If I wanted to control his behavior, then a little while later, maybe I'd want to control his hairdo, and maybe I'd want to control whether he had facial hair or not facial hair, and I wanted to control how close he was sitting to his girlfriend or not sitting to his girlfriend, right? And it's not workable. It's not workable. We don't get healthy, happy, or successful unless we develop effectiveness in choosing our own viewpoints. Our own viewpoints is the thing that we can control to produce happiness or to produce concern, anxiety, or unhappiness. In terms of those top three things that concern or disturb us, how can we shift our viewpoints so that our relationships with those things change? I think knowing this next statement can help us, that we change, not the things. I changed, not the man in front of me. I changed. That's really the area where our power is, to initiate self-change. As I was writing this notes about this talk, I ran over to my next door neighbor to help him with his iPad. He's 88 years old, and I had, on the spur of the moment, decided to call him and tell him how impressed I was with his willingness to engage himself in learning this new technology. 88 years old, I think that's admirable. That's admirable. He's a retired medical doctor. I know he's invented things past. Very handy. And I would say, based upon my knowledge of him over the last 4 or 5 years, that two of his top three things connected to his happiness are listening to classical music, and a few years back I gave him an iPod and put classical music on it, and he was amazed at it. He's been carrying iPods. He now owns 3 different iPods. He just thinks that is the greatest thing. So he was listening to classical music on his iPad that I helped him download the other day. And this other thing that is connected to his happiness is learning new things. He loves history. He loves learning new things. He's open-minded. He's continually trying to expand his reach intellectually. And the iPad represents an adventure in learning new things. That's fantastic, I think. He tells me, and he has told me repeatedly in terms of the iPad, his goal is to learn at least one new thing every day about the iPad. So you can just imagine that his energy exchanges with classical music makes him feel good, makes him feel good about himself, makes him feel good about the music, makes him feel good about his wife and his family and life in general because of this thing we call classical music. And he's engaging, he's finding it an adventure, he's in courageousness, I can see him when he works at it, he's in courageousness interacting with this thing, kind of like a puzzle. He's like a little boy, 88-year-old little boy, playing with this new thing, this new toy, trying to understand it more fully. I believe those two elements, classical music and playing with the iPad, are contributing to his health, which is improving. Not so many months ago, after some serious illnesses and surgeries and so on, it looked like he was going down for the count. That is certainly not the case today. As you would have already discerned from previous Sunday talks, if you've ever heard any, is that I like to use the structure of the 12 worlds. I created this as a handy framework, and it's a way to look at how we engage in life activities. There's a spiritual world, a mental world, an emotional world, a physical world. There's a family world, there's a career world, there's a financial world. There's a social world, a leisure world, a community world, a political world, and then there's a maintenance world. It's a convenient way that I use to look at what I'm doing with my energies, how I am interacting. And if I can use my energies, if I can exchange my energies in such a way as I positively impact one or more worlds, there's a great return on investment there. If we bring clarity to our relationships, we can become more aware of what we are using to make ourselves happy, and we can become more aware of what we are using to make ourselves unhappy. Even the top three thing questions can be rephrased to be top three things that I love, top three things that I love about, top three pair of shoes that I like, top three shirts or blouses that I like the most, and on and on. Now, you can imagine that with that focus, being on the positive could be a very big shift, either from not noticing these everyday items in our lives. And when I thought about this the first time a couple of days ago, thinking about my shoes, I do have fleeting thoughts about the shoes that I like the best. And, you know, and I can actually take the time to focus on the shoes that I like the best. I happen to have on a pair of sandals right now that I like the best of all my shoes. They're not appropriate for all occasions, but if I can control the environment, these are the shoes I like the best. And just knowing that, now all of a sudden there's an energy flow from me to these shoes, and I presume back from, reflected back to the shoes, I feel so good about these things. I can stand in them for hours and walk with them in them for hours and so on. And so instead of them being unnoticed and me missing an opportunity to have good feelings about them and what they deliver to me, or thinking that they're unimportant when they can be an important way to get good feelings, we could take the time to do that. There's an old saying about the 800-pound gorilla in a room that no one is talking about. You know, perhaps you've heard that statement in regards to some sort of a serious problem in the family or in a work environment that is kind of like a ticking bomb that nobody really wants to deal with because it's the potential for it to explode is so great. It's like, we don't know how to deal with this. We, you know, let's, so on. If our fears or unbeliefs command our attention, if our fears and unbeliefs and our concerns and those things that disturb our peace are so commanding of our attention, we will be better off if we face them. Face them, not confront them either with fight or flight, but face them by observing them. I would say looking at these things is the first step in changing our relationship with them. Identifying them is probably the real first step, and then keeping our attention on them until we change relative to them. They don't have to change. We change. If we recognize that these fears and unbeliefs and things that disturb us were created in a different time and place, perhaps when we were most vulnerable, least aware, had the least information, or were in the presence of people who were very staticky, we recognize that today is a different time and place. We, with our intention and attention, are in a much more empowered state. So the things that seem to have this power, the boogeyman, these fears, these doubts, these things that concern us, don't have the power that we're giving them. They don't actually have it in and of themselves. So as we put our attention on them and our intention to get back into balance relative to them and to know how to make the energy that we're experiencing specific as a response, not as a reaction, but as a response, then mindfully we can take effective action. As we change, as we go from being the small girls or small boys, being overwhelmed or dominated by the energy of these outside influences, to a complete reinterpretation of not only us, complete reinterpretation of who we are, which brings us up to present time, of course, and the energies that we experienced and the context in which we experienced that energy exchange as little girls and little boys, we can become free to refocus on the top three things that make us happy, that make us healthy, and that make us successful. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the Creator and connection to all that is, thank you for all of our blessings. Thank you for our increasing awareness and understanding that we can focus our attention on the things that make us happy. We can look past the external appearances of situations, of people, of conditions, to go deeper and deeper and deeper and find the godness in there, to find the goodness in there that we no longer have to fight or run away from, that we no longer have to be angry or afraid of. We can do this for ourselves and model it. As we change to become more like you, to become more aware of the core of us, has to be you if we were created by you, from you. Help us to know that true connection and to be able to harmonize ourselves to the beautiful musical notes of happiness, health, and success. Kindness, lovingness, generosity, compassion. And it is so. Thank you. Amen.